Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartog. Joining me today to answer your gardening questions are a few familiar voices. Bob Graves is a horticulturalist and co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. He's also been an avid hands in the dirt gardener for 40 years. Fred Breglia is Director of Horticulture and Operations at the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And I want you to think I play favorites, but Greg Wards runs Wards Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Greg is known far and wide as the nicest person in the world. We welcome your calls at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also write us at voxpop@wamc.org. Now, this is always a popular program from the beginning until the end. It's raining, but two of the five phones are ringing. In a second, all five phones will be ringing. So if you're smart, you'll get on the phone now. And then you really got problems later on because you'll be yelling at me and saying, how come you didn't take my call? Well, I didn't take your call because you didn't get going early enough. Okay, gentlemen, I'm going to give you each 15 seconds to say anything you like. All right. Let's start with Fred Breglia.
All right. I just want to let people know that next weekend, this is going to be August 8th, we have our ninth perennial 5K forest run. It's going to be registration at 7:30 a.m. and the race starts at 9 o'clock a.m. You can get to more information on www.landisarboretum.org.
You got just in under the wire. And Bob Graves, a co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery, what do you got to tell us?
For the next three Saturdays, we will have Hudson Valley Daylily Society, Hosta Society, and the Iris Society having their annual fundraising sale at Fatigan's. Go to our website at fatigans.com for the times.
And by now, everybody will need those because the deer will have eaten a good deal of what you got. And Greg, what do you have for us?
Well, I would just like to say any of those new plantings you've put in that don't forget to water them. We're hitting some dry weather finally. A good thorough soaking weekly for the next 6 or 8 weeks would be really, really great for them.
Is that right? In other words, give them a lot of
a weekly soaking, or maybe twice a week, not every day, but yes, a good soaking once a week, and they just will settle in.
Amazing. Okay, so here we go. You ready, everybody? Here we go. Bob in Albany, you're on. Bob in Albany.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Watson, I need you. Go ahead.
I have a question for the panel. Earlier in the summer, I bought several yards of brown mulch from Constantine's in Albany. And shortly after it was laid down, I started getting this weird orange mold. Large sections of it would appear every day. It would last for a day or so, and then it would just deflate and start to fall apart. And that's been going on since I put the mulch down. I think what must have happened is that the mulch included diseased trees. And I'm wondering, A, are they responsible for the trees that they turn into mulch, in which case I should have some recourse, and B, is there any way to get rid of this stuff short of taking up all of the mulch and hoping that the spores haven't already gotten into the soil?
Bob Grace?
Well, if it's what I think it is, we call it dog vomit fungus.
Dog vomit fungus.
It looks like, obviously, the dog vomited. My understanding is it's a saprophytic fungus. It grows on a dead or decaying organic matter, has no involvement with anything that's living. So it's something that as often happens in mulch. It'll go away eventually. Very persistent in wet weather.
Is that your guys, Greg? Yeah, you have some fresh wood in with that mulch. It has to decay. This fungus is part of the decay process, and it's not related to the trees being diseased prior.
And how do they make separate? And how do they make the mulch?
Will it last over the winter, or will it die out by winter through the winter?
So what you're seeing are the mushrooms, the fruiting bodies, and if you just rake that up, it will go away. The fungus is actually this sort of root-like kind of white mass that's underneath all of the surface mulch. And, you know, you can, if you disturb it a little more, you'll break that up. Next year, it could do it again. But, you know, it probably by the end of summer, it will have broken down to the point where you don't notice it anymore. Fred?
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, you'll see that like these guys have said. But a lot of times, once it starts to get there a few seasons, you'll actually see a lot less of it. And again, it's not going to hurt the trees. It's just living on dead organisms. So should have no health effect on the actual plants.
Okay, so I bought a couple of yards of it from a place over to New York State, and they delivered it. In the first year, I took the mulch out and I put it in our gardens. The second year, I noticed these, as you said, Greg, these sort of strains of roots, white roots going through there. And they got to be very obnoxious, and they're still there, and I can't get rid of them.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it may also be the plant's roots that are rooting up into the mulch. So you have to kind of see one or the other. A lot of times, even on a woody plant, it will actually have very fine white hair-like roots, the feeder roots of that tree, even a big tree. The roots are not, the feeder roots are very
sometimes
hair-like.
Just going through and cultivating the mulch lightly on the surface to get some air in there will take care of it.
If you have roots that are not breaking up immediately as soon as you rake them out,
that's not fungal.
It's a plant of kind.
Fungal roots are going to break apart
easily. And how do they make mulch again? Can somebody remind me?
Well, a lot of ways, but you know, just a lot of times chipping trees.
Just
chipping,
grinding up trees. Bark.
Well, I have this sort of other mulch. It's sort of like a brown mulch. It's not, you know, it's
so it could be a compost mulch. Okay. So that's sort of a combination of some finer organic matter that has composted mixed with some wood.
And didn't they take and didn't they have a mulch that they made out of human leavings in Milwaukee for a while? What was that called?
More of a fertilizer.
That's a fertilizer. It's still available.
Right, the stuff that made Milwaukee famous.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your good call. Your good call and your good.
Thanks, most people.
You have it.
Yeah, I'm trying to see what I do here. Okay, so now we'll go to number four, which is Bill in Duanesburg. Bill, you're on.
Okay, yes. I have a question about a meadow I recently, quite large, mowed down, keeping it mowed down, but it's all full of weeds and birds and some pretty big stuff. I want to go in the fall and plant, which I had good success with, small plotches by hand of birds for trefoil and a little bit of clover, and put it in with topsoil, bags of topsoil, small amount, and then cover it with hay. I don't want to plow it up because it's too. I just can't. And I want to just do it in blotches. You got any suggestions how to do that? What do you think it'll take hold?
You might want to wait till spring. That would be the first thing I mentioned. Unless you do it very late in the season, the red clovers are really not true perennials. So if they sprout up and start, they may not make it through the winter.
What about the birds for trefoil? What about that?
Again, if you're going to do it from seed. Yeah, I would say waiting until until October, so that it doesn't actually germinate until spring.
And so for the rest of us dummies, what is this something trefoil?
It's a forage grass, often used for hay with timothy and other clovers.
Right. Yep.
And I'm not sure why the gentleman wants to do that. I mean, he's trying to change the mix, maybe. And if you don't have, if you can hire.
I'll give you the answer. The answer is because I've had great success. My father had great success with planting birds for trefoil, which is a very leguminous, and it spreads from the roots. And if you get it started in areas, it'll spread on its own.
Yeah, it takes over an area. You're right.
Yep, that's a valid reason to plant it. And if you are going to do it in the spring, then and you don't really want to till up the whole area, and you're going to kind of do it, sort of like spot at a time. A good trick to save yourself a little bit of labor here is that the areas that you're actually going to be planting it in, try putting something over those areas, cover those spots. In other words, with something that will kill the vegetation, like black plastic would work, but any kind of impermeable membrane.
Good
idea.
Okay.
And then, when spring, you'll have nothing there. You can plant right in a perfectly open spot.
Okay, we got to take a short break. We'll be right back, and thank you very much for Bill from Duanesburg.
Support comes from Saratoga Saddlery, Saratoga Springs, New York, an equestrian lifestyle boutique featuring cowboy boots by Lou Casey and Ariat for women, men, and kids on Facebook and saratogasaddlery.com. Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, locally owned for over 52 years, offering annuals, perennials, nursery stock, organic fertilizer, and advice. HadleyGardenCenter.com. Manny's TV and Appliances, family-owned since 1977, now offering olive oil from his vineyards in Crete, available at Atkins, River Valley Market, Randall's, Foster's, and Big Y grocery stores. Manny'sOliveOil.com. Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home, valleyhomeimprovement.com. The Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for 25 years, independent living in Northampton, East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley. Lathrop.kendall.org. And SPAC, hosting the Philadelphia Orchestra with 12 performances featuring modern to classic with musicians from around the world, August 5th through the 22nd. SPAC.org for tickets.
And we're back. Thanks to all of you for your calls and your patience. Now we'll go to Yvonne in Troy, New York. Yvonne, ask away.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can.
Okay. All right. I have a set of climbing roses that I put them in, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. Last year, they were fantastic. They went all summer long. Mm. They were great. I had the little green worm on it, and I used an organic spray on that, took care of it. It still bloomed. I have not seen a bug bud at all.
All summer.
It's done nothing.
Not even in June.
I have not seen any buds.
But great foliage though. The foliage looks,
The foliage is good. It's not as big as it was last year. Because last year, it actually grows in the front. It was growing over into the sidewalk. It hasn't gotten that far.
So we're pretty sure you lost your roses, that you have rootstock growing, not the original rose.
Roses, after only 4 years?
The top part of the rose and the bottom part of the rose, when they're grafted, are not the same thing. And sometimes the top part dies off and the bottom takes over. And it looks like rose, but it'll never bloom. And last winter was one of the worst winters in 100 years for roses.
It was a tough one.
And they're in the front of the house, and I pruned them back like I was supposed to because it's a climber.
Yeah, so usually the rose, if it's not on its own root, if it's budded, and many roses are, it's good to plant that bud below the surface of the soil, one of the few things you plant too deep. And and that helps. And then, as you mentioned, mulching or winter covering of the crown of whatever's coming out of the ground for about a foot. We like to recommend soil or compost.
I thought I had to cover the whole thing.
Well, covering it about the first foot of wood in November, leaving it until April is really helpful, especially when we have a winter like we just had.
You know, a lot of times you're going to cut it back down to about a foot anyways, especially after a hard winter. So just covering that bottom foot protects that root area and basically crown or a root flare, if you think of it that way. But most trees and plants, you do not cover that root flare with. But with roses, they're a little bit unique. And we only cover them in the fall to get them through a winter, and then you uncover them in the springtime.
Right.
Yvonne, sorry about the bad news, but you'll know what to do now. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, yeah, I'll go find a new one. Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Okay. And then we'll go to Diane in Orange. Okay, Diane, you're on.
Hi, this is Diane. I have a Rose of Sharon. It's about 10 years old. I had a problem last year, and it's happened again this year. I have buds that are ready to open, and all of a sudden they become desiccated. I broke one of the buds open, and there's a maybe 1 centimeter black, thin, worm-like creature. I don't know if it's a larva of a Japanese beetle or not. When I had the problem last year, I was given from my local nursery a tree and shrub protect and feed from Bayer Advanced. We did that to the soil in April.
This year?
This year. And some of the buds are open and they're beautiful, and I noticed the other day that some of them might have the same problem.
Is it really worm-like, or is it a small insect, very small insect, you think?
It doesn't look like an insect because it's elongated and thin.
Because thrips are the most common in the flowers.
And,
right?
And you wouldn't really be able to see the thrip. I mean, you would need a magnifying glass, and that's what we first thought. You had thrips, which will do that exact same thing.
What's
Sounds
a trip?
Like A thrip is a tiny little insect that when it's an adult can fly around, and when it's actually when it's a, sort of a juvenile can still fly around, but the initial feeding happens in the flowers as or before they open.
Often causes a flower bud not to...
I don't think it's a thrip, sir.
No,
it's a long, you know, like I said, about a third of an inch long. It's black. It moves, and it's very, very slender. It's like a very tiny worm.
There isn't a a really common insect issue with Rose of Sharon. This is I think you stumped us a little bit. Love to see a photo of the insect or the larvae that you have. If that's something you can handle and you can email that out, that would be really
good
to see.
How do you do it? What would you do to get to you, Greg?
So if you took a picture and you emailed it to the link, the email link, which is I think info@wardsnursery.com. That will go to me and a couple other people, and we can look around for it.
Okay, is it possible it's a Japanese beetle larva?
No, it's not that, because the larvae of that would be in the soil. But I had one question. Is every one of the buds that doesn't open, does it? Every one of them, as far as you could tell, that you've checked, contain one of those little
black
critters?
Yeah, and this is not all the buds. Some of the buds open, and they're fine.
And they're fine, but the ones that didn't open, when you look into those, every one does have one of those little guys.
Yeah.
In it. All right. Yep. You could also send it to fred@landisarboretum.org if you want, or to both of us. We're curious.
All right. I think they're ETs then.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Bye.
That leaves one free phone open. I told you it was going to be go fast. And Mary in Windsor, Connecticut. Mary, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. And to our wonderful volunteer who doesn't know who she's dealing with here, instead of using Roman numerals, can you use numbers? Very helpful. Thank you very much. Okay, Mary, go.
When we bought our house some years ago, we have big maples in our yard, not too close together, maybe 40 feet apart, so they have some room to grow. But my problem is with the flare at the bottom of the trunk. The trees have a high enough crown that some sun gets under there and the grass grows, but it grows right up the flare of the trunk, and it can't be mowed.
Okay.
And the flare is maybe, 6 to 8 feet across, and I try pulling it off, and it regrows. And I know that a big mound of mulch is not good for the tree, so what do you do? We're getting older, and we need lower maintenance. I'm trying to figure out something that will work better.
Well, first, let me say that a root flare is a wonderful thing to see. And, so many times I see problems associated with tree health and plant health because the root flare is not visible. It's underground, and of course you know that, and it would lead to bad health. So mulching that.
What is
the root flare? Is a place where the trunk meets the roots, and you'll see that on almost every tree. It comes down and flares out right at ground level, and that part of the plant is designed to, over many thousands of years to literally be sort of above ground and dry.
It's supposed to be on the surface.
That's right. And those cells are designed to be sort of dry. They could take rain and moisture, but then they dry out. Now, if you put that area of the tree or plant under a constant moisture condition like roots, you develop crown rot, which will rot that root flare and end up leading to a lot of other problems. So what do you do with the...
adding a little mulch.
Yep, you could add a little mulch. Hand weeding, I've had pretty good luck with hand weeding. I can use you got to be careful using string trimmers around trees, of course, because the living parts of that tree are just under the bark. So if you hit the tree with a weed whacker, that's bad.
I'm not going to do that.
But what I've done, at the Arboretum, we deal with this with, countless trees. And my crews are pretty trained pretty well. We can weed whack really close to the tree without actually hitting it. And then that last, let's say, inch, depending on how daring you are, how skilled you are, that last inch, actually, after you do the weed whacking, comes out a lot easier. You can just get that, you're only dealing about 1 inch of grass. And a little bit of mulch, as Greg said, could help slow that down.
By the time I'm talking about the roots of the grass are on almost vertical side of, high up the flare. I'm talking a foot above the level of the lawn. The grass is growing way up. And I'm wondering, if I would plant ivy, for example, what does that do to a tree?
Planting it around a root flare shouldn't really hurt the tree at all.
So even goutweed, a circle of white goutweed around the base would...
Can you pull that soil away from the trunk gently so that it's not banked up against the flare?
Yeah, we have. We have over the years. We've tried that, but it just keeps growing grass. And I'm trying to, you know, my husband's in his 70s. We're trying to find a less intensive way of dealing with this, you know, long term. That's why I was wondering.
It's not necessarily hurting anything either. I mean, you can just leave it go.
It's more aesthetic.
Lousy. Yeah, that's right. You know, 3-foot grass stems sticking up. I just wondered how you folks dealt with it. But something like ivy or gout weed, a circle of that around wouldn't hurt the tree.
No. I'd be careful planting gout weed only because it could end up in other parts of your property, and you don't want that in your gardens. If you have perennial gardens, that's going to be a nightmare. But otherwise, yes, you could certainly plant some type of ivy, which might help outcompete it.
Lamium is a shade tolerant, dry shade tolerant perennial that could work there instead of gout weed.
Yep. And when you dig around a root flare, just be careful not to injure the actual flare itself.
Oh yeah.
Trees don't deal with basal injury as well. But otherwise, I think hand pulling selectively until you can get that ivy to get established, I think you'd be in pretty good shape.
Okay. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Good luck.
And I don't like gout weed either because then you can never eat asparagus again. Okay. Let's go to Joel in Clintondale. Joel, you're on.
Okay, hi. I'm planning to develop a edible forest garden, and I'm wondering if anybody has some general comments or suggestions.
Well, the term is called permaculture.
Yeah, I know.
And there's, I'm sure, plenty of books out there, lots of online material. I know there's some people that I believe over in, I don't have their name off the top of my head, but people over in the Northampton, Massachusetts area that give tours of what they've done, which is pretty spectacular.
What are we talking about here?
Permaculture is essentially creating spaces in your yard or creating gardens that will provide you with some food, and often they are more than just annuals such as lettuce or tomatoes. They're perennial, so they're fruit trees. They're herbs that are perennial, and just trying to make your yard have both form, function, and a food source.
Great. Okay, thanks a lot.
Right.
Appreciate it. Okay, now we'll take something over the internet. First, shout out to Fred B., who took our hiking club on an outing in Atlantis. He was a great hike leader, and the grounds are beautiful. Learn a lot about trees that way. Okay, question. My aunt said that Queensland's lace and wild carrots are different. Also, I read that if planted with tomatoes, the tomatoes do better. Any comments?
They may be a slightly different species. I think, you know, carrots are hybridized, but Queen Anne's lace is a carrot. If you pull up
really?
A large Queen Anne's lace, there's a carrot at the bottom of it.
No kidding.
Not as tasty, but
try that.
They're edible.
We got it. Okay. Two, my uncle says not to water the vegetable garden because the roots will stay at the top if you do.
That's not true. What happens is, though, it could be partially true, and the reason why that happens is when you water and you do light watering, you encourage shallow root growth. So really what we want to do across the board, and this be perennial gardens, vegetable gardens, trees and shrubs, et cetera, is less frequent, more thorough watering encourages deep root growth, and that's really the direction you want to go. So deep waterings, less frequently,
typically, if you're standing there with a hose, you're not deep watering.
You need an appliance, or you need to let
that hose run a little bit.
If you walk away from your hose on a trickle,
then you're deep watering.
Yeah, that's right.
Interesting.
Yep.
Okay. Is it better to water hanging plants in the AM or PM?
It's better to do it before they dry out. So I would tend to do it in the AM because that would be nice to sort of get them going. They'll dry out for the day. If you do it in the PM and the plant leaves dry out before sunset, then that's fine too.
Recognize in this kind of weather, you may have to do it twice.
Yep. Yes. And the big problem would be just getting the foliage wet at night in this kind of weather with humidity, increased fungal diseases to leaves could be a problem. So just if you're going to do evening, I recommend try to keep the leaves dry.
Okay, that's all on this one, although there are more. Let's go from Bonnie. We got two red currant bushes 2 years ago from Greg's establishment, and they're in too shady a spot. Can they be dug up and transplanted now, or should we wait for the fall or the spring?
Depends on how daring you want to be. I have definitely moved currant bushes in the middle of August, which is probably one of the worst times to do it. But they're very tough, especially if they've been in the ground a little bit. And if you get a good, reasonable root mass, they will move. You will have to deep water them, as Fred and Bob said, for several days afterwards. You may get a little wilt, but they will recover.
A lot of the answer to that question depends on how well you are able to water them at the time that you move them, because it's easier in the fall. You don't have to water as much because it's cooler.
That's right. And also they're more forgiving because this time of year you really want to try to get a good root mass. Whereas in the fall, if the root mass, especially when it's dormant, then it's kind of like taking a baby when it's sleeping from one room to another room. Well, he wakes up, he didn't even know he was moved. Well, that's kind of the philosophy with moving trees and shrubs. If you move them when they're dormant, they wake up and they don't necessarily know they're moved. Less shock, easier for you to do, higher success rates. But, you know, you got to be a little more careful in the summer, but certainly could be done with supplemental watering.
And although if you did ignore them, that you could kill them, they are difficult to kill. They're a very, very aggressive plant.
Very good. Let's go to Fred in Wineskill. That's Fred. And by the way, there are two free phones open here, folks. Don't fool around. This is the time. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Fred in Wineskill. Fred, you're on.
Hi, guys. Hey, I've had, over the years, I had these, like a flowering bush or shrub, almost like a small tree, but with a lot of stems coming out. And over time, significant parts of the plant, the complete stems would kind of die back, and the leaves would shrivel up and dry out, and it basically killed the plant. And now it's affecting azalea plants that were near it. So, like, significant stems are just all of a sudden, all the leaves shrivel up and die. The other parts of the plant are fine. And I was just curious if it's some kind of bug that's getting in there and releasing something into the xylem so the water can't flow up, and how to treat it.
If it's something in the rhododendron family, which azaleas are, there is a soil-borne fungus disease that sometimes causes certain branches to die off.
And so knowing that they're all of the same family, or you know, knowing the specifics of the plants would help us to decide.
Well, the other bush was like either a rose family shrub or a hawthorn shrub. So it was completely different.
So different. These are different families, definitely not related. You know, are they all stressed for various reasons? Are they all over-mulched too deep that would cause a problem sort of across the board and could show up like that? So if they've all been planted a little deep and or you've added excessive amounts of a mulching material, especially close to the trunk?
They were put in basically in 1988, and they were okay till about 10 years ago this started.
There are various vascular fungal diseases that cause vascular collapse that are species-specific, but you've mentioned a couple of species that do get those types of diseases. They just may be altogether different diseases.
Yeah, okay.
Are there insect vectors involved?
Borers could also do that kind of a thing. Any kind of boring insect that would eat vascular tissue, not something that would be feeding on dead material, but an actual, like a round-headed apple borer. And you mentioned the apple family type plants, which is hawthorns and stuff. So in any case, a boring insect would do that. You would see some kind of little sawdust kind of coming out near what I would call the root flare down at the base. If it was a boring insect, you should see some type of, and it would be maybe discolored sawdust because it would be mixed with sap. The other thing I would tell you to look for is just any mechanical damage, any weed whackers hitting the branches.
I'm too lazy to do that.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. And call again. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Tom in Saratoga Springs. Tom, you're on.
Hi, folks. Thanks for taking my call. I've created kind of, I guess, a grazing animal wonderland in my backyard. I've got a whole lot of rabbits and now I have a groundhog who's moved under my deck.
That's bad.
Yes, it is. How do I get him to relocate?
Uh-huh. Shartoks have had many, many experiences with this. And let me tell you, it ain't easy. And it can be expensive. But we have a rule in Massachusetts. I don't know if it's here in New York, too, that you're allowed to catch them, but you're not allowed to move them.
Yes,
that's correct.
It's against the rules. Now, I know lots of people who move them, and worse, but their name isn't Shartok, and they don't write columns about the police department. So, so that can be terrible.
Yeah.
You can catch them all right. They're not that hard to catch. My only recommendation is don't do it at night. Do it during the day, because at night, the skunks will get caught.
Oh, yeah. And so you use a have a heart trap? Is that what you use?
Have a heart trap.
Yeah. So So setting up a have a heart trap and get the big one, because even the one that looks big enough is usually not big enough. Yeah. Get the one that you can stuff a big raccoon in.
Yep.
And and then you bait it, as Alan said, during the day, because they're diurnal. They're you actually do it at about 5 in the morning, and they'll be in there by 7:15, because they're only around for a couple hours in the morning, a couple hours in the afternoon, evening, and the rest of the day they're sleeping.
Put some veggies in there.
Yeah, they veggies like or fruit. They like.
I like broccoli.
Oh, and pears.
Broccoli, really.
And they
pears
like pears.
Or apples. Yeah.
Okay, so try various baits and catch them, and then, as Alan said, you're not supposed to move them, but you can do them in.
We got one day, and Murray the dog, who's a little Westie, came running out, and I never saw anything so ferocious in my whole life. Murray, who I think was bred to do this, kept his nose in the trying to get in there, and this thing was and sort of snapping at him. So it was ugly. But in any case, good luck. You won't win. Talk to you. And by the way, I looked them up, and the average groundhog has 5 offspring. So even if you think you're done with them, you're not.
They do actually seem to know where their either their parents or their relatives have been. So once you get rid of this one, that same location could be used again. I have heard, though I have not tried it myself, that used kitty litter into that hole, into that area, does discourage them from returning.
Have had some decent luck with that.
We'll have to go get a cat too.
Yeah.
Or your neighbor.
Or your neighbor.
Yeah, Murray. Yeah. So we have to take a break. We'll be right back.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Support comes from the Center for Extended Care on University Drive in Amherst, a family-owned and operated nursing center offering rehab, long-term care, and Alzheimer's specialty care. CECAA.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, presenting Upbeat on the Roof, a series of concerts performed every Friday evening in July and August at 7 p.m. Skidmore.edu/Tang for information. Planned Parenthood Mid-Hudson Valley, providing sexual and reproductive health and education services in Dutchess, Orange, Ulster, and Sullivan counties for over 80 years. PPMHV.org. Apex Solar Power, Queensbury, New York, locally owned, installing solar panels, solar hot water, solar pool heating, apexsolarpower.com for information. Curtis Lumber, working to support their communities through their Pet Connection sponsorship and by providing professional services and supplies to owners and contractors. CurtisLumber.com. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com.
Okay, very quickly, we've got a couple of things over the internet. We can go fast on those. Good afternoon. I do a lot of hiking, and from time to time, I come across what appear to be wildly growing apples, grapes, and other fruits. Do you know what kind of variety of apples and other fruits are the ones that we see growing wildly in the Hudson Valley? Are they edible?
Apples?
A lot of times, yeah.
All the apples are
edible. They're not going to hurt you. Yeah, it's palatable.
Heavy FLW, famous last words. They're not going to hurt you.
Palatable is more the word.
They may not be very tasty.
Yeah, a lot of times those wild ones. Sometimes you come across them though, and I got to say, sometimes I've taken apples off these wild ones, and wow, you get a really.
They
good
seem
one.
Wild, but they've obviously been most of them been seeded from something else. Most of the
exactly.
Time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's not native. And it's not native.
The grapes are. Usually a Concord type.
That's what we have. Yeah. Lots of Concord.
Yep.
Okay, gentlemen, can you please explain the recent proliferation of yellow nutsedge? What can be done to control or eliminate it?
It's a tricky one.
It's hardy. Is it in your garden? You pull it out if it's in your garden. If it's in your lawn, you can still pull it out, but there are herbicides specifically for sedges.
Yeah, there are specific ones for nutsedge. They're called nutsedge or nutgrass killers.
Because the average
it likes that wet weather we had in June. That's a lot of times what brings it out is that wet weather.
Yeah. Okay, and here's a fast one. We have many very large oak trees on our property. A few of our standalone oaks have been absolutely decimated by caterpillars, probably gypsy moth, the past 2 years in the early spring when they've first leaf out while the oaks and woods seem unaffected. The trees are a beautiful addition to our yard. We don't want to lose them. What can I do to help this year, and what should I do to keep this from happening again in the future?
You know, most of the time caterpillars run on cycles, so a lot of times, a couple of years you'll see defoliation, and then usually if it's a healthy tree, they'll grow through it and not have any major problems. But you could certainly pick them off when you see them coming up the trunk, but a lot of times you're never going to be able to keep up with that. Yeah. Usually they'll run its course.
It is a cycle, and the trees are fed on during a time when there's enough time for them to regrow new leaves, so that does keep the tree alive and reasonably healthy. It's a stress, but as Fred said, it shouldn't persist. It should be a year or two, and then they're gone for several
years. You can usually tolerate it for that period of time.
The worst case is when you have trees that are stressed to begin with and maybe from other underlying causes, and then those become even more magnets for these sort of caterpillars or any other pest, and then those trees can suffer sometimes more severe injuries due to caterpillar attack. But healthy trees usually can take care of it. If you needed to, last resort, they could be treated.
Okay, very, very quickly, gentlemen, because we're running out of time here. Here's one. Gentlemen, somebody bought a plant for our house in Great Barrington on the porch. It was a begonia, flying begonia. Yeah. We went to Italy, and somebody refused to water the plant because a robin had set up her nest in the plant.
So how did it fare?
What'd you say?
How did the begonia fare?
It died.
It died.
Well, the begonia died because could we have watered it with the robin's nest in it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, we do it all the time.
Do you?
They make nests in the hanging baskets.
That's where it was, in a hanging basket.
And, we water them, and they're absolutely fine.
Yep.
And,
I even prune.
And the babies are born and everything?
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
you could even prune trees with nests, and not the branch with the nest in it, but I prune around them, and the mother flies away, but you just be careful.
She comes right back.
The only thing you want to watch, I would say, for birds is that if the babies are getting close to the point where they were ready to fly, but they're not really ready yet, that's the time you would want to avoid watering or pruning or anything around that plant. And the reason why is it could prematurely make those babies want to fly. They'll fly.
Yeah.
But then they're not really ready to stay airborne, so they end up on the ground, and they become predators in general.
Yeah, yeah.
So other than the time when the babies are getting close to fledging, you're pretty good.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like you need a new begonia.
We certainly do. We'll see you later, Craig. Right. Okay. Here, let's go to Merle in Argyle, where everyone wears socks. Merle. Hello, Merle.
Oh, brother.
Merle, you went away from the radio. That's against the rules from the telephone.
Hello.
All right.
I'm here.
All right. Let's go. What do you got?
All right. This is a real quick one. Butterfly weed. When's a good time to transplant from the field to around the house?
Oh, so you mean milkweed? Milkweed?
Butterfly weed.
So butterfly weed is the common name for that orange flowered one.
That's right. It'd be probably orange now.
So you could lift those now. As we were talking earlier about the currants, you know, there is the potential for stress, but if you lift that plant, get a good root ball, move it back to the garden, water it well, thoroughly, but not too consistently, it should be fine.
Try not to break the root ball.
Try not to break the root ball. Thank you very much. Okay, now we're going to Ron in Albany. Ron, you're on.
I've got a question about the climbing vines that, to my mind, seem to be ruining our trees along most of all the roads that you drive along in the country, and even see them now growing in some trees in parks and villages. Has anybody got a concern about that at all?
Yeah. You mean like bittersweet?
There are vines that we call killer vines. So there are like bittersweet. Bittersweet will. It depends on how they climb trees. Bittersweet.
Well, the trees. Excuse me. I'm sorry. The trees seem to be covered with these, so I don't see how the light can get through, especially on evergreens.
Yep.
I did see one set of evergreens die because of this.
Sometimes
let's get an answer. We're running out of time here, guys.
So bittersweet is a non-native, considered invasive in Berkshire County, Massachusetts.
Yeah, we don't like
and that plant is devastating, especially the open edges of forests. The other vines you could see up there, grape, as we talked about before, Virginia creeper, two native plants that generally, certainly can screen the plant a bit, but don't strangle the tree. They do not affect the
New York flow. Has passed an invasive species law, which is one of the ways to solve this problem, is to prevent some of these things from being sold and transported.
Okay, so assuming,
but
assuming they're there.
Cutting them.
You want
cut
to cut them out.
Cut them out.
And again, think about how trees put on leaves from a physiological standpoint. In the spring, they are going to leaf out from stored energy. So if you cut something after it uses all its stored energy, well, it doesn't have a lot of power to regrow. Yeah. And that's your best time to cut any kind of invasive plant.
Okay.
But otherwise, just keep persistently cutting.
Okay, let's go to Alex in... I think I did something bad there. Oop. Okay, let's go to Alex in Stockbridge. Alex, you're on. Alex... Let's see, where'd I go here? Go there. Go there. Alex, are you there? Alex is gone. I think I screwed up. Call back, Alex. We'll take your call. Let's go to Ralph in Charlemont. Charlemont. Okay, go ahead.
Hey there. How you doing?
We're good.
Oh, good. I wait all month for this show. I love it. I always, always listen. Hey, I have been teaching edible wild plants to kids and older people for decades, and I go so far as to teach them about edible wild mushrooms because many of them are very, very distinctive and can't be mistaken for anything else. But I always, always recommend that people stay away from wild carrots. Wild carrots, Queen Anne's lace, looks almost exactly like poison hemlock. And it's very, very easy to make that mistake, and a little bite of poison hemlock will kill you.
Yeah, that's bad.
So I know Alan was saying that he was interested in trying planting wild carrots with his tomatoes. Make sure you know what you're doing there.
No, I'd never do it. First of all, I don't have any tomatoes. And secondly, I won't do it.
They are okay. Somewhat similar in their flower
that's
form.
Right.
It's yes. Almost Socratic, isn't it? Don't you get it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because that's
yes.
How Socrates died. Yeah, he took the hammer. Okay, well, that's great. Thanks a lot. Bye.
So long.
Okay, where are we going now? We're going to, did the guy call back? No. Okay, we'll go to, like Robert, maybe, in Skenevis. Okay, Robert in Skenevis. Okay. Whoa, it does say four, doesn't it? Yeah, but it's not there. Okay, so now we only have two people on the phone. Something's wrong. Let's go to Betty in Kerhonkson. Betty, you're on. Hey, Betty. Betty.
Hello.
Hello, Betty. Let's go. What do you got?
Hi.
Hi. What do you got?
Well, I have a miniature rose bush that I planted that's now become a big rose bush. And all the little white blossoms. Turn brown. Hello.
You have to turn your radio off. Hey, Betty, you broke the rule. The rule is you can
turn it off.
Okay.
I turned it off.
Okay, go ahead. Now you got little white flowers on your miniature rose bush, which has become a big rose bush.
And they're turning brown. So I don't get my beautiful pure white roses. I get I don't know.
You're saying they're turning brown prematurely, you know, not after they bloom, of course, not dying back to
right.
You're telling they never really get to a full flower.
And is this plant outside or in a container?
Yeah, it's in my garden, and I've left it out for the last 5 years. I've had wonderful roses. It's turned into a big, tall, long-stemmed rose bush.
And the rest of the plant looks healthy, right?
Yep.
Just the flowers.
I would say you may have thrips.
Yeah.
That's, what are we
One of the things you can do is just cut the plant back, that take everything off. If this is a ever blooming or repeat blooming plant, it will grow out and bloom again and see if that works. And
I've done that.
All right. Once they're in the flower, they're pretty much impossible to get out of there. So again, removing any flowers that you may think have thrips in them is good. And then you can begin to apply. There are some pretty organic, that spinosad Captain Jack stuff is pretty good on thrips.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll give that a try.
Okay. Thanks a lot. We want to. Well, not really. We got five people on the phone. We got about four minutes. Thanks
great.
A lot. Right.
Thanks.
Bye.
So bye.
I'll get a letter on that and say, "Dear Dr. Shartok, you've been so mean to me." Okay. Let's go to, let's see here. Four. Pam in Schenectady. Pam, you're on. Pam. Oh, maybe that's not Pam. All right. Let's go to, let's see, who's there? Is that
Hi,
Pam?
Hi, this is Pam.
Okay, Pam, go ahead.
I have an evergreen tree, and it has the fine needles. And each summer I tend to get, I think they might be spiders, and part of the tree kind of dies off. And I'm wondering how I can prevent that organically, if there's an organic way.
Do you know what kind of evergreen you've got?
It's got the fine little needles. It's not an arborvitae.
Is it small or tall?
It's kind of tall, and it's getting bushier every year. It's really lush and like a light green right now.
When you say tall, are we talking 5 feet, 10 feet, 15 feet?
Probably 10 feet or less.
Under 10.
More than five, but
Maybe a dwarf Alberta?
That's what I was thinking. Maybe spider mites on dwarf Alberta spruce is what I'm thinking.
Spider mites love dwarf Alberta.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's probably spider mites on a dwarf Alberta spruce. If
what do you do about it?
Well,
usually a soap or an oil.
Yeah, I was going to say soap or oil sprays.
Got to wash the whole tree?
Pretty much.
More or less. A tank sprayer with the insecticidal soap. It's nothing toxic. You spray it. You want to really try to cover it, though, when you get that nozzle.
Clogs their breathing apparatus so they can't breathe.
Will it work?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oil's really effective. Watch out for the high temperatures. Yep. This weekend looks really good, though. Low, you know, highs of 80 are perfect.
Yep. What about dogs and grandchildren? Will it hurt them?
No.
It's okay, so can you just, you said oils or soaps?
So there's a thing called horticultural oil, often referred to as dormant oil, but there, you would use the summer rate. You would apply it, you would mix it with water and apply it thoroughly to the plant so that every inch of the plant is dripping wet.
Yep. And then the other one is insecticidal soap, also very safe, and you can purchase that at any
the same
garden
way.
Center. Yep, and less concerns about burning the plant with soap. You can kind of put that on almost any time. The oils, you do want to, you know, be careful of really hot days.
Okay, thanks, Pam. Okay, now we're really running out of time here. This is serious. We're going to go to Robert in Skenevis. Robert, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling because my wife and I just bought our first home and don't know anything about plants. And we have a weeping cherry tree by the door that was in the spring. It was beautiful, bloomed, and now everything is turning brown and dying. I keep trying to water it.
Is it newly planted? Did you put it in this year?
We didn't put it in. It was there when we bought the house, and I believe it's been there like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah. And the leaves have some green, but otherwise look kind of ugly?
A lot of them have turned completely brown and fallen off already. There's parts on the tree that still have some green leaves,
happening from the top down?
Yes.
Yep.
It seems kind of across it and then down.
Yep, but the bottom looks better than the top.
Yes.
Yeah. Then it's probably something to do with, my guess is either a borer in there. It could also be mechanical. In other words, it could have been hit with like a weed whacker. I don't know if that's an option. It also, any kind of girdling happening that you see, any kind of rodents chewing it, maybe from the past winter, that would be a good time. You'd notice it down low. And otherwise, look for a root flare. We've been talking about root flares a lot. But
if you take a few photos and email those out to the link on the website, we can talk about it more.
Yeah.
Okay. What website is that?
Wardsnursery.com.
And Fred.
Wardsnursery.com.
Yep. And Fred at landisarboretum.org.
Fadigan'sNursery.com.
Fadigan'sNursery.com. Okay.
All right, thank you very much.
Those are your three choices. Okay. So let's see now. I think we may have time for a really, really fast one. Oh, yeah. Okay. We're going to go to Alex, who got off the phone before. Alex, it was my fault. You have 1 minute to present your proposition. Go.
What's the best method to deal with Japanese knotweed?
Mow it.
Yeah, mowing it constantly.
How do you do it? Where is it? What is it?
It's a very invasive weed that grows mostly in poor areas.
It gets tall. It looks like a bamboo. A lot of people call it bamboo, but it's not a bamboo.
Leaf. And is it on your lawn?
It can be.
It's in non maintained areas, non-gardened areas. It grows up in the side of the road.
But Alex, that has to be it. I'm so sorry. Appreciate your patience with us. We don't have any more time, so I want to thank Shelley of Cheshire, Sarah of Charlton, and Dan of Delmar. We're not going to be able to get to you guys today. You guys are just too good here. And a big thank you. We're out of time. And thank you to Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward. Support for the Vox Pop comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Surrounded, sampling Birchfield's wallpaper with original designs and watercolors by Charles Birchfield through September 20th, arkellmuseum.org, Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring an assortment of perennials, annuals in 8-inch pots, trees, and shrubs, Monday through Sunday, 8 to 5, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com, and SPAC, presenting the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center for 6 performances, August 9th through the 25th at the Spa Little Theater, spac.org for tickets, and Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Popper. Engineer's been Jess O'Rourke. Thanks to Deb Malik for answering the telephones today. Our producer's Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. It's Food Friday tomorrow. Stay tuned now for a news update.